The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 453, to be broadcast on Wednesday, September 3rd, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment down here below. I might be able to get back to you. Never know. If you need to reach me in any other way, just send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to reach out to us in some way, please just drop me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Another bump in the road, episode 7? Oh my God, I've been doing 7 of these since I got my neck done. Anyway, it's the cervical fusion results. You know, pain's improving, flexibility is limited, not great. Franny and I went for a little bike ride yesterday. I rode on a drop bar bike yesterday, and it was okay. It wasn't too bad. I've been using a flat bar to hopefully hold my position a little better, but I don't really notice that much of a difference. So anyway, I'm going to have to keep working on this. I need to learn how to stretch my body in different ways so I can see where I'm going, because I got a big titanium bridge in the back of my neck. Anyway, I will hopefully get better at this. On a positive side, speaking of, PT. I'm wearing a PT shirt. Yeah, that's it. These are the folks that put me back together again. I went to them a few times and they gave me a bunch of exercises to do, and I definitely have gained a lot more flexibility, which is cool. And so a big shout out to these guys up in Stores that got me going, and I've been released. Yeah, they wrote me off. They said, you're not going to get any better, you know, with us right now, so just continue to do your exercises, and here we go. So I do a lot of little stretching things and all that. It's great. It's working. It's definitely getting better. Like I said, I rode a drop bar bike the other day for the first time. That was on the rail trail. It was definitely, I'm still not on the road yet, but anyway, we're getting there. Let's see what else is positive here. The Vuelta, 1 week down, 2 to go. Yeah, good stuff at the Vuelta España, the Tour of Spain. If you have been watching, you know what's going on. If you haven't been watching, you need to pay attention. It's a great race. One of the three big classics. Definitely fun times. Great stage on Sunday. Let's see, I gotta remember where I am here. Yeah, great day stage on Sunday just before the rest day. And, you know, things are starting to develop. So it's pretty cool. And yesterday I rode with Fran on the airline trail. We rode into Willimantic and we went to the coffee shop and sat and had a coffee and then rode back home. And it was okay. You know, it's still, like I said, I'm still a little stiff, a little uncomfortable, and it's really hard to see going forward. Working on something there. I'll talk about that later if it works. But anyway, Town of Mansfield, of course, is continuing to work on their traffic calming on Route 275. We really like seeing that because we need to slow cars down for the cyclists and for the pedestrians that are constantly on that section of road really close to the university. We had an unfortunate occurrence a few years back where a graduate student was in a crosswalk crossing the road and was hit and killed by a car. So it is potentially a very dangerous place. And Town of Mansfield has reacted to it, and they're upgrading it and making it happen. So that's really cool. That's a positive. And one of North America's most Bicycle-friendly cities is getting even better. New York City. Yeah, New York City is one of the most bicycle-friendly cities in the United States. Did you know that? I never ceases to amaze me. They are already the most bicycle-friendly city in the United States, according to People for Bikes. And it's about to get even better. According to a new announcement, the city is laying out a bold vision for the future of its parks and waterfront access with the release of Greater Greenways. It's called Greater Greenways. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. And while we're shouting out all our wonderful places up here in the Northeast, where I'm broadcasting out of, a big shout out to Massachusetts. Why? Because Massachusetts has the state's first solar-powered e-bike charging and rental station, opening in Somerville, and it opened last Thursday, and it's part of a collaboration between Metro Mobility and the Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority. Shout out to Massachusetts for paying attention. But we know they pay attention. That's what they do. Anyway, Mechanical Minute and Ron's Bike Tips. It is back to school time, so we really need to be careful about keeping our eyes open. And I got a couple little tips there on that, but we went over this last week. I talked about commuting on your bicycle, using your bike for, and how to lock your bicycle. But this week we're gonna touch base on a few other things. But one of those mechanical things I wanted to talk about, and I was having this conversation with another cyclist recently, is when was the last time you charged your battery on your DI2 or your SRAM electronic shifting system? Yeah, you know what? If you're old school like me, you still use cables. Yay, cables, like cables. Yeah, I know, I'm cranky old guy. But a lot of people have gone to electronic shifting, and I'm starting to get more stories along the way as I go to more events and meeting up with more people who are out riding their bikes. I'm hearing the story about, oh yeah, I made that mistake once. I made that mistake a couple of times. You gotta charge the battery on those electronic shifters, or else you get stuck in one gear only, and then you're gonna be spinning your way home in a very low gear. I think that's the good news about it, is it puts it back up into a low gear, an easy pedaling gear, instead of putting it into the hardest gear on your bike like you would if you broke a cable. Now, chances of breaking a cable, that's out there too. It can happen. I just repaired a brake cable on Fran's bike because it was broken. But it happens after a while. You got to check those cables often. Once a year is usually enough, and that usually solves that problem. But computers, it's another story. So, couple things. Here's an FYI. If you have a Wahoo computer, and I'm assuming a Garmin also will do the same thing, but I don't have a Garmin computer, so we'll just go with the Wahoo right now because that's what I use. You can actually check the DI2 battery level on your actual computer on your handlebars. There is an indicator. You go over to the menu button, and then you can scroll down on the menu, and it'll have it synced and showing you exactly what the battery level is left in your battery system on your bike for your shifting. That's kind of cool. So I'm assuming that Garmin probably does the same thing. If you want to comment on that, you can comment below, and I'll give you a thumbs up on that. But or just reach out to me in some way. So a modern DI2 battery, we're talking modern now. These things came out a few years ago. So if you've got an older model, this may not be the same as the newer models are. And there also may be a battery upgrade. I'm not really sure. I don't know the specifics on this. But a modern DI2 battery will last between 2,000 and 5,000 kilometers per charge. That's a lot of riding. That's a whole bunch of riding. So that seems like it would be sufficient to get the average person through the year. But you never know. You never know. It depends on how much you ride. And I know people who ride an extreme number of miles. And so, they probably need to charge it 2 or 3 times a year. So that's there, but there is a catch on this. And this I thought was really, really interesting. The front derailleur works a lot harder than the rear derailleur does. So the front derailleur is going to require more energy to change the chain from the small ring to the big ring to the small ring. If you are an obsessive front derailleur user, constantly going back and forth, you're going to wear your battery out quicker than you would with the rear derailleur, because the rear derailleur requires a lot less effort to shift the gear. So if you use your battery a lot, it will run out a bit quicker. And you know, you should still use your front derailleur. If you need to use it, you need to use it, right? That's no big deal. And some of these systems actually will shift for you and keep you, if you've programmed it by cadence, and you know, it'll automatically do that. So the big thing here is you need to keep track of these things, because if you get stuck, you will know. You will know for sure whether or not your battery has died, because your bike will just stop shifting. Apparently, it stops shifting in the front derailleur first, because they are sophisticated enough to feel or understand that that's the high effort derailleur. And if you start seeing that happening, then you better get yourself back to your charger as soon as possible. So that'll help. Once the battery reaches 10%, the front derailleur will just simply stop working. This way, the most battery hungry operations are disabled, and you should be able to finish a ride using just the rear derailleur. But if all of a sudden your front derailleur is not working, that means that you are almost out of juice. So be careful. I mean, think about it. We charge our cell phones all the time, charge our tablets all the time. We're constantly charging things. Even my computer that I put on my bike, I'm always charging it. You know, it runs out after a while. You got to put a charge back in it. You got to think about this if you have an electronic shifting bicycle. Very, very important. So anyway, you can also check your DI2 battery level easily on e-bikes and urban bikes. And I just heard this other thing too. Billy had shouted out to me and said that he had one of the new upgrade, the firmware upgrade for the Wahoo computers, the ones that were giving everybody trouble that I talked about last week. He said now it displays his e-bike battery capacity also, which is kind of cool. So, and if your bike is an 11 speed or 10 speed bike, you have wireless, just hook up your bike and your bike computer and look up the battery charge level. And then it says here on Wahoo, Garmin, or other bike computers. So apparently all the bike computers have that option on it. And that's a pretty cool thing. And if you are without a Bluetooth ANT module, simply press and hold any of your shift buttons for a half a second, and the left LED on your junction box will illuminate to indicate the charge left in your battery. So there's a bunch of ways of doing it, but just make sure you do it, because you have to charge the battery every once in a while, or you're going to be left 30 miles from home and stuck in one gear. And that's just not fun. Now, I have had that happen to me when I've been out on my bike, when I've broken a cable, or Fran once broke a cable stop off of her old Pinarello. The cable stop down by the rear derailleur just simply popped, and it popped off of the carbon fiber frame. So we had to do some fancy rigging to make things happen, and a little bit of tape around the chainstay, and this is not something I recommend, but you know what? When you got to get home, you got to get home. We were a long way from home. We were up in Southbridge, Massachusetts, and we were, you know, 30 miles to go. So I went into a convenience store and I found they had these little mini hose clamps. And yeah, that's what I did. I wrapped it around the tubing after protecting the tubing with, I don't know if I used tape or if I used a piece of an old inner tube or whatever, but something that I had with me at the time. And I didn't want to damage the frame, so I simply clamped the housing onto the chainstay and she could shift again. I, unfortunately, similar ride. I think we might have even been going to the same place. We're coming back out of Southbridge, Mass, and we were in Woodstock, and I had a SRAM system, shifting system at that time, and I flipped my lever and I went, "Oh, that feels weird." And then I heard clink, 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 and the lever just broke off. And now I had no rear derailleur because the lever was simply broken. So I took a screwdriver and I adjusted the adjustment screws so it stayed in what I found to be a reasonable mid-range gear in the back that I could tolerate on the hills. And I had a two-speed because I had a front derailleur still, but no rear derailleur. So there, you can do innovative and clever things out on the road that will get you home, but it's just very inconvenient, which is why you need to always be looking at your bike and figuring out what's going on with it before you go out and ride it so you have good rides all the time. All right, let's move on out of that and into advocacy here. Let's see, did I put this in here? Oh yeah, I did have another thing here. I wanted to talk a little bit also, and we'll get to it in a bit, about a bike bus. And that's kind of a cool thing. I have spoken about it a few times on the show in the past, but I found a neat article about it, which I'll talk to you guys about. But let's start out right here. So everyone's talking about AI. AI is everywhere. It's, when you're looking for directions, when you're using your phone, it seems like AI is popping up all over the place. And now there's all sorts of things you can do with AI. I have no idea what they are, but apparently it's something that we old folks will finally figure out. And as I am being marketed towards the you need to learn how to do this part of my life. I don't need to learn how to do this. But anyway, so here it is. More and more, it seems like in an AI world, we're being forced to deal with it. But how does it impact bicyclists? Well, there's a good question. Well, let's take a good look at that and see. Let's see. Find this, so, and I know I put it in here, and now I can't find it. Everything you need to know about, well, that's a different one. I lost it. Oh, here it is. So, the AI world is a world that we're being forced to deal with. And how does it impact cyclists in cities? Around the world, artificial intelligence is taking on a positive role, improving daily riding for cyclists. From the Silicon Valley showboating, AI has embedded itself in traffic signals, bike share systems, route planners, and even helmets, making urban cycling smarter, safer, and more responsive to real-world conditions. For cyclists, navigating traffic-choked intersections or pothole-ridden bike lanes, these changes couldn't come soon enough. But while technology is impressive, its real power lies in how it's applied, with a strong focus on equity, life, lived experience, and practical value over flashy promise. So, what is it doing for cyclists? Intelligent road guidance. Modern cycling apps are starting to do more than calculate the shortest path, and now AI can now recommend safer, quieter, and more rider-friendly routes based on live traffic, infrastructure conditions, elevation, and even your riding preferences. Whether you're commuting to work or hauling groceries, these smart suggestions, excuse me, can help you avoid congested roads and unsafe zones. Enhanced safety features. AI-enabled sensors, whether embedded in a smart helmet, bike lights, or on bike devices, can monitor your surroundings in real time. They detect fast approaching vehicles, sudden lane merges, Blind spots, alerting riders before danger strikes. These features are particularly valuable in busy urban areas and complex traffic dynamics. So if you're riding down the road with a rear light and you have a radar on the back, it's AI, folks. That's what's giving you that indication that shows up on your computer, maybe has a light alarm with it, or just a flashing screen, or however you have set it up to work for you. So there it is right there. And then AI learns over time. Cycling patterns help systems adapt. Preferred shaded bike paths in the summer, avoiding unlit shortcuts at night, or choosing smooth routes over bumpy shortcuts. This result in navigation experience that feels tailored, not generic. So there is a company called the Lumos Nycel helmet. It's an advanced smart helmet that combines sleek design and cutting-edge AI safety features. This powered by Quinn technology. I don't know what any of this is. It uses high-quality sensors and artificial intelligence to detect crashes in real time, analyzes impact location, G-forces, and rotational acceleration. This data triggers automatic emergency alerts, sending your location to designated contacts by way of your smartphone, adding extra layer of protection beyond standard helmets. The Nycel also features automatic brake lights, bike turn signals, and team sync lighting for group rides. This is crazy. I'm going to have to do some research on this one because this is a little scary. But I do have a picture of it here in front of me. It looks strange. Anyway, I think it's probably good for urban commuting, but I'm not so certain I would be wearing it on a group ride. Doesn't look like it has any vents on it. So the benefits of AI stretch out far beyond handlebars and helmets. Cities are using intelligent systems to make better planning decisions, manage infrastructure, and shared cycling systems. So city officials often lack current data on how, when, and where people cycle. AI changes that by analyzing ride telemetry from connecting bikes and apps. AI can generate detailed safety heat maps, access road surface quality, and even highlight underused roads in need of an upgrade. These allow cities to design infrastructure and reflects the actual behavior, not just outdated assumptions. From New York to Copenhagen, AI is helping bike share providers predict demand. Algorithms optimize where bikes are deployed and where they are distributed, cutting operational costs while keeping more bikes available during peak times. That's what that little app is on your phone if you're a bike share person. And machine learning models now adjust traffic signals in real time to reduce cyclist wait times and prevent conflicts with turning vehicles. In places, lights detect approaching cyclists and give them priority, resulting in a smoother, safer crossing. Whoa, now we're talking. Road safety is top priority. This is what this project is for. And artificial intelligence can make the roads safer by detecting cyclists and pedestrians and manage traffic signals to give them more time to cross safely. And let's see, connected e-bikes equipped with sensors record data on speed, braking, surface roughness, and vibration. And they give a vivid picture of street conditions from the cyclist perspective. And this information can then be accessed by planners, and they can see where they need to make their improvements. It's also made a difference in the world of corporate cycling, logistics, and shared mobility fleets. It predicts maintenance needs, usage trends, and even rider safety scores. Oh my God. just like the little box you can put in your car to keep your insurance rates down. I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. AI generated data on CO2 savings, ride frequency, and active travel supports corporate social responsibility and sustainable targets, making it easier to prove environmental impact. Whew. Are we ready for this? So this is some, this shows you some of the tools that you can get with AI, but we need more. This is where my feeling is. I would love to have the AI talk to the cars better that are coming up behind me. My bike talks to me when a car comes up behind me, but that doesn't necessarily tell the car that's coming up on me either way too fast, or the car that wants to try to pass me while there's another car coming the other direction. Cars don't do that. They don't communicate that well. Or as they are coming around a corner, I would like it to tell the driver, there's a cyclist on around the corner. You know, I think that we could improve a lot more. And so that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for that. And I think it's in our near future. I do believe. So as you get into a heavier populated urban situation, you're going to see more of these things happening, as we see speed cameras at traffic intersections and cameras in general at traffic intersections. I think you're going to see an awful lot of cool stuff coming up. The real future of AI and urban cycling isn't about killer apps or high-tech bikes. It's about ensuring that planning reflects how people truly move through their cities. Whether you're a seasoned cyclist or just starting out, AI is already shaping your life, and done right, it can help you make you ride safer, smarter, and more equitable for everyone. So anyway, that's kind of a cool article. I thought it was a neat thing to talk about because it's just interesting. So let's go on to back to school. Okay, we're going to flip back to, we talked about it last week. I'm going to talk about it a little bit more this week because this is related a little bit more towards kids, young kids going to school. And this is happening and evolving more in urban areas than it is in, you know, our quiet little town of Mansfield here. But just so you know, there's something called a bike bus, okay? So the bike bus movement can be traced back to 2020 in Spain, when two teachers from El Petit Miguel School in Vic embarked on a mission to accompany 9 children to school by bicycle. Navigating busy and polluted streets, the initiative faced a temporary setback due to the pandemic, but experienced a resurgence in the fall of the same year. Responding to local demands for secure cycling infrastructure, the Bus BC was born, making the inception of the bike bus concept. Since then, the movement has grown organically, and with 40 bus lines launched in Barcelona metropolitan area and 790 participants, a number steadily increasing each week. The success and popularity of the bike bus model have rippled through across the continents, capturing the imagination of educators, parents, and communities worldwide. So the bike bus movement has not only gained momentum in Europe, it's also crossed the Atlantic, making waves in the United States, inspired by the success of Barcelona's bike bus model. Sam Balto, a physical education teacher in Portland, Oregon, initiated a similar project at the Alameda Elementary. What started as a small project quickly evolved into a weekly event, and uniting over 100 students every Wednesday in a two-wheeled parade to class. Cool, huh? So, yeah, so what is it? Everybody is like, you're saying, well, what is it? What is this thing? So the bike bus is simply parents that are riding with kids in a large protective like Peloton and keeping all the kids together and riding down the road and commuting in and, you know, trying to choose the safest streets of which to do it in, of course, but letting the kids get the freedom and the feel of being able to ride their bike for transportation, which is so, so incredibly important. So it's a really kind of a cool idea. And, you know, you could take three or four parents and maybe a dozen kids, and you just kind of herd them and pedal in with them. And, you know, it's just, it pushes, you know, all the things you want, the physical fitness aspect, the health aspect, muscle strength, cardiovascular health, mental well-being. All these things are approached when you get kids on bicycles. And when you put kids on bicycles, they're going to be happier. They're going to be much more easy to deal with in the classroom because they've had a little exercise before they get there. This is a really, really positive thing. And it's starting to get traction. It's gaining traction. And focus shows it's shifting towards encouraging network expansion and informational sharing. And Gareth Johnson from the Shawlands Bike Bus in Glasgow expressed a renewed determination to make a change, to grow the movement, and get more kids safely to school on their bikes. So this is a good thing. So start your own bike bus. Here's a practical guide as to how to do it. Number one, assemble a group of interested families. Reach out to parents, teachers, students interested in promoting an active transport. Utilize community forums, school newsletters, and social media to gain your interest. Plan the route. Carefully consider your routes to school. Really, really important. You got to be picking up people along the way, because that's what will happen is you'll ride down the road and then someone else will join you and then someone else will join you and the bus will get a little bit bigger as you get closer to school. But you want to try to plan the route so it goes by the certain houses that the kids are participating in the bike bus. So plan your route very carefully, and also very carefully plan the route around safe riding, safe routes. Establish a schedule. Determine the frequency of bike bus operation based on participants' availability. And you have to have some sort of an online manageable type of schedule, like a Google Sheets or something like that. You could probably put something together there. Safety first. You have to emphasize the importance of wearing helmets and following traffic rules. And this is what better way, other than our wonderful fourth grade program here in Mansfield, teach kids more about using their bikes and learning about their bikes and learning about rules of the road, than doing something like this. And then you want to engage your local authorities, seeking support from local government and school authorities to address safety concerns, facilitate permissions, and potentially contribute resources. Hey, wouldn't it be cool if one day a police officer showed up on a bike to help teach and show kids about the rules of the road? That would be a really nice positive influence. And create positive and inclusive culture. You want to foster a camaraderie among the students, encourage inclusivity, and ensuring everyone feels welcome regardless of their biking skills. So this is a really cool project. If you're interested in doing it, or if you have done it, why don't you just shout out to me and let me know what you've experienced, how it's worked. I'd love to hear feedback from my listening audience. So anyway, the bike bus, a cool, cool idea. All right, what else do we have here on the list of things today? Gotta get rid of this. Okay, let's go to New York City. New York City, one of America's most bicycle-friendly cities. I just kind of blows me away, because I always think of New York as this just really crazy, congested, covered with cars, and it's insanity, really. If you've ever driven your car into New York City, you know what I'm talking about. It's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure. It requires a lot of skill. And this is just driving a car, not riding a bike. riding a bike in that traffic, I just cannot imagine why you would want to do that. But then again, if the infrastructure starts getting laid out like it is right now, then you're going to become a very bicycle-friendly city. So that's super cool. So they're already the most bicycle-friendly city in the United States, according to People for Bikes, and it's getting even better. According to a new announcement, the city is laying out a bold vision of the future of the parks and waterfront access with the release of Greater Greenways, the New York City Greenway Plan. And you can look that up online. There's links for it. It's very cool. The report announced on August 13th, outlines how the city will close gaps with the existing greenway system, bring safe, accessible walking and cycling corridors to more neighborhoods. Greenways continuous multi-use paths are designed for walking, biking, and recreation and become a vital New York City amenity. The city currently has more than 500 miles of such routes, but officials acknowledge that access has been uneven across the five boroughs. New plan of its kind for 30 years aims to change that. Public spaces create vibrant spaces where New Yorkers can move, play, thrive. And the administration of New York is committed to increasing access to public spaces and parks and waterfronts for every New Yorker, said Mayor Eric Adams at the launch event along the East River Esplanade in Midtown. While it may be we outside summer, our administration is making sure every neighborhood has a front row seat to New York's beautiful outdoors all year long for generations to come. It's a great thing. It's a 200-page plan, and it was required under Local Law 115 in 2022. It's divided into two chapters. The first maps the existing 506 miles of bicycle and pedestrian corridors and examines their benefits from safer travel to cleaner air to economic development to new links and job centers. The second lays out the city's vision of the future, and with five guiding goals: enhancing the transportation network, promoting social equality and accessibility, supporting health and wellness, fortifying environmental resilience, and fostering economic growth. So, go get 'em, New York City. Pretty cool. If you go to Momentum Mag, that's momentummag.com, you can look all of this up because this is where I'm getting this information from. It's really, really neat. And it even shows a new Greenways map, which is pretty much wrapping all around the islands of New York City. It's really cool. Totally, totally cool. So, yeah, New York. I would not have guessed it. I would not have put them into a safest city to ride a bike in category because it just doesn't seem that could be possible. But on the other hand, there it is. And if you do the work and you put through the proper legislation and you make enough noise about it, things like this can get done. And they've got a citywide network of greenways that connecting New Yorkers and their neighbors with the great outdoors, providing safe and accessible places to work up a sweat, take a stroll, or appreciate the beauty of the five boroughs. So this probably is because, and I'll throw this out there as I'm just kind of guessing at this, but for a number of years, New York City has had in the spring, they have, I think it's early May, first weekend in May, the Five Boroughs Bicycle Tour, and it rides through all five boroughs. Now it's completely closed off for traffic and it's quite safe. Well, well, it's as safe as people can be in 30,000 people getting together on bicycles. I'll let you decide what you think is safe and what you don't. I find it to be a little nerve-wracking, but it is kind of a cool event. If you've never done it before, I would definitely encourage it. It's one of those, you need a little box to check off in your life. I'm going to go do the Five Borough Bike Tour and see what that's like. It hooked Franny so bad that she, or so good, I should say, that she went on to become a cyclist. That was like her first introduction to, wow, I can ride my bike and this is a really cool thing. You know, she's always had a bike. She had a bike at college and all that, but she decided to do the Five Borough Bike Tour, and that was it. She was hooked from that point on. So pretty cool stuff. You know, New York, you would never guess to be as bicycle friendly as they are, but with this new Greater Greenways program, it's not just about maps and policy, it's about linking neighborhoods, reclaiming waterfront, and building greener city where walking and cycling are the most natural ways to get around. Go New York. Big thumbs up, big tip of the chapeau, as they say in England, to New York for doing the right thing. So that was really cool, and I thought that would be a neat thing. So let's see what else we got here on the list. Well, it's time to move on to, yeah, that bicycle racing part. Let's see, we did the bus, we did that. Bum, bum, bum. So the Vuelta. The Vuelta, the Vuelta, the Vuelta. Have you been watching the Vuelta a España? We're now 9 stages into the Vuelta a España, and It has been an interesting race. It has certainly been an interesting race, and the race has developed in a number of ways. There were a couple of mountain stages in the first week, and things got a little heated on those stages, so things really started to happen. There were 6 medium mountain stages, and there's 5 mountain stages. We already got through the team time trial. If you like watching team time trial, it's like watching just an extremely polished machine going down the road when you put them all together like that, taking turns in the front and doing the strong pulls. And there is a strategy to it, which is kind of cool, but they're doing in excess of 30 miles per hour, sometimes in excess of 35 miles per hour. And they are so tight. And you want to see what it looks like to watch professional cyclists, work together and work tight like that. That's a skill level which is way, way high. And it's kind of cool to watch just to see how it all works, because they're all riding on special bikes and they've all got the aerodynamic helmets and the whole deal. It's a time trial, but they're doing it together. And I think that the ending is, I'd have to, you can fact check me on this one, but I have to double check to be sure. I think it ends with, you have to finish with 5 riders, or the 5th rider is the time of how you're timed. So it behooves them to stay together as long as they can, but there's also a strategy to it where you send out your strong, the strong young domestiques that can take the really long, hard pulls. You put them up in front to begin with to really get it going. And then with an intention of them falling off the back eventually because of complete exhaustion. So it's kind of intriguing to watch. It's a lot of fun, but I love the mountains. I just do love the mountains. And I've got, Stage 6 is when things started to really get wild and crazy. And that's when Jay Vine climbed to a victory on stage 6. And that's when Torstein Train took the red jersey. Torstein Train is a 30-year-old cyclist from the Netherlands. And he started out his career when he was younger. He ended up running into a problem with testicular cancer. He also, at that same time, was found to have human growth hormone in his body. There is a link there. So anyway, he beat it and he is back and he's racing well at the moment and currently holds the red jersey. So he is the leader of the race at this time until we'll get to that, until stage nine when things start closing in on him. But anyway, Jay Vine claimed a victory in the first high mountain finish. And as his fellow breakaway rider, Torstein Train, I looked that up to try to get the, it's spelled Traeen, but they say train. That's what they say. So these, some of these Dutch and Norwegian names are a real challenge for me, but I'm getting better with it. So, UAE Emirates, XRG's Vine attacked with just over 20K to go and was never seen by the other nine members of the day's escape. Train from Bahrain victorious, clipped away from the other chasers to claim the red jersey. Behind the group of GC favorites, largely finished together, but with previous race leader Jonas Vingegaard ceding his position. So he had the red jersey only by a few seconds, but he did have it for a short period of time. He had won stage two. And so anyway, that's kind of where they were at. And by stage six, he had given up the jersey. But I got to tell you, Visma is being very calculated. They're really riding, I think, a very, very smart race, as they tend to do. They tend to be very clinical about the way that they race their bicycles. And so if you're ever looking to understand bike racing, just follow what that team does, because they're very smart and they tend to be they don't take extraordinary chances. They just calculate everything out really nice. So the riders are all they're all doing really well. But here's where I gotta make the jump. And of course we had a few more tough stages, another big mountain stage with a mountaintop finish on Sunday, and that is where things got hot. And Visma Mateus Jorgensen, the American rider for Visma, put on just an incredibly hard attack on the final climb. And it was, a long climb, mountaintop finish. And he put it on until he turned it on until he couldn't anymore. He flicked his elbow out, and that was the sign for Jonas to make a jump. And Jonas made a jump. He brought one rider with him who eventually cracked. And it was the Jonas Vingegaard show. And it was really, really cool to watch, because he's, boy, that young man can climb. He can really, really climb. He's so he ended up soloing to the finish, and it was really, really fun to watch that, because he he's that's his second victory now in the Vuelta. The first victory was by a half of a tire width. It was so close. But this was the second one, and there was no tire widths on this one. He just cruised across the line without any difficulty whatsoever. So he, let's see here, he was 4 hours 32:10 was the finish on that particular one. And the next closest rider was Tom Pidcock at 4:32. And Jay Almeida at 4:32. Also, they worked together. There was a three man. It was Gall, Almeida, and Pidcock together, and they worked together pretty closely to the very finish, trying to chase down Vingegaard. But Vingegaard done gone. He was gone. There's no question about it. So anyway, total distance was 195 kilometers, just an amazing thing. And of course, as Jonas crosses the line, he moves himself into second place, And he is behind by not that much. 35, 40, 30, 36, 20, 37 seconds. So, 37 seconds is a lot because it's not a lot because he was over 2 minutes behind when Train had taken that victory on, not the victory, but the red jersey on stage six. He was quite a ways away from the GC riders, so they ended up putting minutes of distance on them. This happens often, but there's also, certain concerns about certain riders and others that are not so concerned. And with the team that Vingegaard has going into this particular race, I think that he is still the favored man in this race. So really, really, really fun stuff to watch. The points jersey is held by Mads Pedersen, still by 120 points. Second place is Vernon with 111 points, and third place is Philipsen with 105 points. The big climber, the polka dot jersey. The polka dot jersey is blue polka dots in the Tour of Spain, in the Vuelta to España, and it is being currently worn by Jay Vine, who won the race on stage six, and he's got 34 points and 23 in second and 20 in third on that. And the Young Rider Award is currently being held by ounces. I don't know this guy's first name. Pellizziari, obviously a very Italian guy. He rides for Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, and he is 27 seconds ahead on time to, this is M. Riccitiello, who is riding for Israel Premier Tech and is from the United States and not on my radar. I will have to find out what he is all about, because I don't know. But anyway, so it's been an interesting race, and the team prize right now is with UAE Emirates, and not by a lot, not by a whole lot. So anyway, Team Visma-Elisabike is the next one behind them. They're 3, what's it, 3 minutes and 6 seconds behind, and as far as team standings, I think that's going to change. We got a lot of mountains coming up this week. I was looking at the schedule, and it looks like there's going to be a whole lot of climbing going on, and we shall see what happens as far as that goes. So I am very interested in this guy, who says he's wearing a U.S. flag here. I don't know who he is. I'll find out more about him. He was born on May 3rd, 2002. He's young. He is definitely young. Anyway, we'll find out a little bit more about him, report back about him at another time. I'll see if I can figure that out. So, moving on. We are getting close to end of show here. I got a few minutes to go. I just want to throw a few bicycle business tidbits out there. Specialized distributor Eurasia Imports is closing down after more than 50 years of selling mostly high-end parts for the road, touring, and fixed gear bikes. I used to buy from Eurasia back when I had my bike shop, and that was a long time ago. But they always had some really, really nice high-end, Campy and just high-end European product. A lot of stuff there with those guys, but they have made a decision to close down. It's a family-owned business, and they said, "That's it, we're done. We can't do this anymore." So, moving on to events. Let's go to events. The Vuelta. Yeah, here it is. So, we're at a rest day right now, but starting on September 2nd, which will be tomorrow and a day before this broadcast on the radio. It goes on till September 14th, 2025. And yeah, the Vuelta goes on. So a big week of racing coming up. If you're watching, it's really, really fun. I think that this is being broadcast on Peacock. I'm not 100% sure on that, but you can always get daily highlights on YouTube. YouTube has condensed daily highlights, so you can keep track of the race and see how it's going. If you have the luxury of being able to watch it, the whole thing, then, you know, that's exciting too. So lots of good stuff going on there. And I know it's not even August yet, but here we go. Yeah, Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series. It's here. It's here. It's coming up. We got a lot of races coming up. Got a bunch in September. And then we have September 9th, Belltown. No, it's September 6th, Belltown. September 21st is Hidden Valley Cross. September 27th is another Belltown race in Portland. In Newtown is on the 5th of October. Mansfield Hollow, Damned at the Dam, is on the 11th of October. Moran Cross is the 16th of November. And Orchard Scorcher, the 30th of November. So that's our local Connecticut series that we have coming up. And this will be our second year of Project Mayhem, as it is called. And hope to see you guys there. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. In the meantime, the Rocky Hill Cyclocross Series has already completed the first race last Wednesday. And this Wednesday will be the second race. There'll be two more after that. They're training races in Rocky Hill at the dog park. So check that out. That's pretty cool. And what else do I have here on my list? I have Sunday, September 21st, is the 9th annual Southbridge Credit Union Tour of Pocum, bike ride for land conservation. So you might want to check that out. And the River Valley Cross Series started on Sunday, August 24th, and runs through Sunday, October 19th in Springfield, Mass. And that's a Massachusetts series that is going on right now. So you might want to check that out. All these are on BikeReg. If you're looking to get more information, go to BikeReg.com and they can guide you in the direction. And yes, we are anxiously awaiting to see your signing up with the Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross Race. So finishing points, the Vuelta. Are you watching it? Are you checking it out? It's a fun race. There's a lot of excitement going on there. It's going to get more intense now that we have some big mountains coming up. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. Remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. The League of American Bicycles is making biking easier and safer for more people, because more of the people ride bikes, the easier and safer, the more people ride bikes, people are happier, healthier, and our communities are safer and friendlier. That's where I was going. And our planet is greener. So that's a beautiful thing. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. You need to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. Get out and show up to a town meeting and explain why bicycles are so good for all of us. Consider parking your car for a day and ride your bike instead. You can change your life. It's a beautiful thing. Please be safe and kind. The views expressed are on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch. And if you're watching on Facebook Live, you can comment down here below, or on YouTube TV, you can do the same thing. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my YouTube channel. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. Get on your bike!